My friends, tonight we have trouble.
Yes.
Now, up until now, this has been fairly easy, wouldn't you say? We've been just kind of going through and enjoying going through Asher Norman's book, and pointing out, well, that's not a really substantive objection. But tonight, there are some substantive objections. And so we have. I don't know how we'll get through the whole lesson tonight or not, because we might have to slow down to talk about this. On the other hand, if we might just, it might behoove us to just blow through it really fast and not pay so much attention. We'll see what happens. It's in God's hands, huh? One nice thing about the Bible is that you can always, at any point, you can just say, I didn't write it. It's God's book. So here's our premise for reason number 8. And this is reason number 8 why Jews don't believe in Jesus, which I said should be titled 26 Reasons Why Jews Shouldn't Believe in Jesus, is more the sense of the book, more the intent of the book. So these are not necessarily reasons why Jews don't believe in Jesus. Generally, Jews don't believe in Jesus because they're Jewish, and Jewish people don't believe in Jesus, and that's what it means to be Jewish for most of the world, now that Jewish identity has been so reduced after the Enlightenment, so that most Jewish people are no longer walking according to Torah. There's this one remaining tenet of what it means to be Jewish: you don't believe in Jesus. So Asher Norman's book, in a sense, is an attempt to bring some substance to that aspect of Jewish identity. Anyway, we digress. Reason number 8. Reason number 8 why Jews don't believe in Jesus is that Jesus failed to fulfill any of 6 authentic messianic criteria. What does that mean? It means that there are 6 things that the Messiah has to be or do in order to be the Messiah. And Jesus didn't do these 6 things, or was not these 6 things. And so it says Jesus did not qualify as the Jewish Messiah, Ben David, the Davidic Messiah, for the simple reason that he did not fulfill any of these criteria. And then Asher Norman goes on to explain what it means to be Mashiach in the first place. A Mashiach is an anointed one. And he points out any king of Israel that's anointed with oil, you know, he's anointed with oil as a king. So every king of Israel is Mashiach. So every king of Israel is a Messiah. David's a Messiah, Solomon's a Messiah, King Saul is a Messiah because he's an anointed one. Every priest is an anointed one because every high priest is anointed with oil. So every high priest, you could say, is a Mashiach. But to be the Mashiach, the Messiah son of David, is to be this predicted Davidic king that will accomplish these 6 things. So let's take a look. What are they? Number 1, it says, genealogy. He must be a son of David through Solomon. If he's not a son of David through Solomon, he doesn't even qualify. He's not even in the running. He might be a wonderful person that accomplishes all the other things that Messiah is supposed to accomplish. But if he's not a son of David, then he's not the Davidic Messiah. Fair? Okay. Number 2, he must be anointed as king of Israel. This also seems fair and obvious, since that's what Mashiach means, the anointed one, anointed as king of Israel. Number 3, he must return the Jewish people to Israel. And we'll look at a few prophecies if we have time that say so, but suffice to say, that is the primary job of Messiah in the prophets of the Old Testament, is to gather in the exiles of Israel back to the land of Israel. Number 4, he must rebuild the temple in Jerusalem. Number 5, he must bring peace to the world and end all war. And number 6, he must bring knowledge of God to the whole world. Okay, and so we'll look at the scriptures as we have time. But I want to go back to his premise. So he says, these are the things that define Messiah, and since Yeshua did not do these things, he's not the Messiah. And he points out that these criteria are empirically verifiable. And this is a very interesting thing, and we need to establish this. So I'm going to read to you a little bit of what he wrote here. He says, faith is irrelevant to the Jewish concept of the Messiah ben David, because an individual either fulfills these prophetic criteria or he doesn't. Christianity requires faith that Jesus is the Messiah precisely because he did not fulfill the Jewish messianic criteria. Now that is a correct statement. That is absolutely true. We are called believers. Why are we called believers? We're called believers because we believe that this man is the Messiah without proof. Now, if I was part of a group, imagine if I formed a special group that believed that Barack Obama is the President of the United States. And that was our, you know, that was our affiliation. And I would say to people, you believe Barack Obama is the president, don't you? Because if you're not, we're going to cut you off and throw you out of here. You know, there's probably not going to be too much conflict with people because that's something that's empirically provable right now, that he is the President of the United States. Yes, so it doesn't require any faith. It doesn't require faith. Whereas the fact that Yeshua of Nazareth is the Messiah of Israel ahead of the time when he has actually accomplished what the prophets say the Messiah of Israel is going to accomplish, that is a leap of faith. This is not a bad thing. Asher Norman presents this he says, Christianity's concept of faith in Jesus is therefore a substitute for this defect, the defect being that Jesus hasn't accomplished these things yet. We say, well, you just got to believe because you can't prove it. But that's exactly what faith is. That's exactly what it means to be a believer. Now, I can liken this back to my Barack Obama analogy. Suppose that before it still looked like Hillary Clinton would be the choice for the Democratic nominee, if I had started a little group of believers that Barack Obama will be the next president, you know, and we became the Barack Obama supporting team, and then he got in, you know, That's pretty good. You know, we maybe could have done some campaigning for him and achieved some positions on his cabinet or something like that. I don't know. So the idea is, from the apostolic perspective, that the really exciting thing about the gospel is that we have the goods on who the Messiah is prior to the Messianic era. So you have to understand that, because if you understand that, then the rest of the lesson is not so problematic. Understand that when Messiah comes, everyone's going to see it, everyone's going to know it, and it's not going to be a big, you know, it's not going to be like a big deal. You have faith in Messiah? Well, yeah, he's here. Okay, so now let's press on here. Oh, he wanted us to read a little bit of Maimonides. And this is a great passage of Maimonides. So I'll read it to you. This is from Maimonides' treatise on the laws of the kings. It's an exposition on the laws that pertain to kings of Israel. And so this is a passage about Messiah. Very famous passage. He says, we may assume that an individual is the Messiah if he fulfills the following conditions. He must be a ruler from the house of David. He must be immersed in the Torah and its commandments like David, his ancestor. This is from Deuteronomy 17. He must follow both the written and the oral Torah, lead all Jews back to the Torah, strengthen the observance of its laws, and fight God's battles. If someone comes along, he says, if one fulfills these conditions, then we may assume that he is the Messiah. Then we may assume that he is the Messiah. But we don't know for sure yet. If he does this successfully and then rebuilds the temple on its original site and gathers all the dispersed Jews, and gathers all Israel into the land, all the Jewish people into the land, then we may be certain that he is the Messiah. He will then perfect the entire world and bring all men to serve God in unity. It is true that the prophet predicted the wolf will live with the sheep and the leopard will lie down with the kid. This, however, is merely an allegory, meaning that the Jewish people will live safely even with the wicked nations who are likened to wolves and leopards. So Maimonides is basically saying, if somebody accomplishes these criteria, he doesn't have to do anything supernatural beyond this, beyond accomplishing these criteria. World peace, rebuilds the temple, gathers in all of Israel, you know, fights the wars of the Lord, strengthens people's observance to Torah. In other words, that's teshuva, brings returning them to God's laws. He's a son of David. That's all. If someone was to hit all of those, then that person should be considered the Messiah. Yes.
Is that why in the end times even the elect could be deceived of the Antichrist, because he'll look like he fulfilled all those things?
No, that's a common. I think that's maybe a dispensational idea. I'm not sure. It's the idea that the elect will be deceived because this Jewish Messiah will come and he'll do all these things, and then, you know, and he'll rebuild the temple and all of that sort of thing, and then they'll be deceived, and then the real Messiah will come. But that's not really, I mean, that wouldn't even be playing fair. You know, if God sends us a guy who, like, fulfills all the criteria of Messiah and then says, fooled ya, wrong, that's the wrong guy, that's not even fair. So if we had time to study the teachings on the false Messiah, to learn about false Messiah, there are some things that we can identify him by. He also has criteria he must fulfill to be false Messiah. And this is very much connected with Hanukkah, this idea of false Messiah. Because a false Messiah is modeled after Antiochus Epiphanes. So false Messiah, for example, must set up an abomination that causes desolation in the sanctuary. He must exalt himself as the Most High God to be worshipped. He's called the Lawless One. So he actually does away with Torah, so to speak. These are some of the biblical criteria of the Antichrist, or false Messiah. Okay, so let's get started on these criteria. The first one is the hard one. The rest are not so difficult. The first one is really the hard one. It's the genealogy. So Asher Norman says, regarding the genealogy of Messiah, we know this, and we know this from the scriptures. And we have the texts, so we can look them up. It might be useful to do so. Let's go to that 2 Samuel chapter 7, one of the most critical messianic prophecies in the Bible. 2 Samuel 7. So Asher Norman says, okay, Messiah number one must be Jewish. How do we know that? How do we know he must be Jewish? Yeah, but let's just go with Jewish for now. Suppose David had a non-Jewish kid. it's possible, isn't it? He could have. Yeah. So, how do we know he has to be Jewish? There is a text. Does anyone know it?